Dr. Jeffrey Halstead has been Canandaigua's hometown dentist for more than 35 years, offering routine dental care as well as cosmetic dentistry, implants, and dentures by their highly trained and experienced staff. Visit them online at canandaiguadentistry.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram.
Everybody, welcome in to Fresh Takes with Russo and Felice. Paul Russo, Nick Felice here with you as always. Nick, good to see you. It's been a week. I was out of state. How you doing, though?
Doing good, Paul. How was your weekend in Richmond?
Can't complain. We'll touch on that probably towards the end of this or at the end of this podcast. But yeah, can't complain. Always a pleasure.
Are you excited for Monday?
Yeah, I mean,
you know, it's Monday, it's right?
Kind of hard not to be.
Well, eclipse.
Oh, I thought we were talking about the championship game, March Madness. But yeah,
who cares about that? The eclipse is what I'm talking about.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, why not?
It's gonna be big time over
here. I got my glasses.
I gotta get my glasses still.
Come on.
A little nervous. Cannot look at that. I already don't have great eyesight to begin with. And I don't want to ruin it over some moon going in front of a sun, whatever it is. What's going on?
Yeah.
Is that what it is, a moon?
It's, yeah, the moon will be moving in front of the sun in its orbit of Earth.
Wow. Yes. So it's supposed to go on for like 2 hours, but right here in Second Falls.
Well, no.
Half of the moon will be on it, though.
Correct.
For 2 hours.
Well, that's how it moves.
Part of
works.
The moon will be on it for 2 hours, but yes. For 3 minutes, 2 minutes.
It will be a complete
dark
blockage. Yep.
Here.
Complete eclipse.
What's the weather supposed to be?
I don't know. Either way, while you look that up, I will talk quickly. I know at the jump you saw our Halstead ad up front. Appreciate their support as always, but we have a new supporter here over at FL1. Give them a shout out, the Lux Hotel and Conference Center. The next great location for your overnight stay, wedding event, reception, meeting space, and more with on-site food and beverage at Woody's Bar and Grill. You'll find everything you're looking for in one spot with us. Contact the Lux Hotel and Conference Center today to inquire about your next opportunity. So appreciate them jumping on board with us here at FL1.
58 and sunny, so it's going to be be interesting.
There we go. I'm with it.
That's going to be weird for 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's weird. I remember the one in 2017.
Yep.
The partial-ish one. I inadvertently looked up during it. Wasn't the greatest experience of my life. But, yeah, I kind of forgot about that one at the time. But, yeah, I mean,
it's bigger around here.
It's interesting, yeah, because, I mean, it's a full eclipse this time. And no partial, nothing.
Better for our area over here.
Yeah, coming back from Richmond, and even going down too, but I know some more on the way back up because of just obviously, you know, I'm in a southbound lane going to Richmond, not northbound lane. But coming into New York from Pennsylvania, there was a lot of signage going on. And I'm not going to sit here and give you a full-fledged deal, right? But it's going to be busy around here just in general. Probably through the weekend, I'm assuming, and into Monday.
A lot of people traveling.
Because obviously it's Monday. I can't imagine a lot of people come in just day of the way people have been talking about it. I mean, I've been told like there's like hotels completely, and they have been completely booked out as far as to Rochester. And Rochester is in the path, I'm pretty sure, if I recall right. Or they're right on the edge. But I know for a lot of people it's just easier because there's just more hotels and stuff out that way. I'm imagining, shout out to Lux, obviously. Just talked about them a little bit, but I imagine they're going to be pretty busy as well with folks staying, coming in. So
is it going to be like the middle of the night darkness?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be like dark. Like I'm more intrigued, not so much by like that portion of it. This is really weird given we're really a sports podcast at our core.
But this is cool.
Right, but I'm intrigued by, and this is where it's awesome having a guy like Chris Lejeski come on and talk with Josh on Inside the FLX, another podcast here on FL1 that if you don't listen or watch, I recommend you do so. You know, he brought it up, and I didn't give it much thought until that point when he talked about it a little bit, and now I it's the part I'm probably more intrigued about rather than the actual eclipse itself, is how are animals going to be reacting to this? Like, because obviously we're humans, right? We have the, we are animals. We have those tendencies like they do, right? The clockwork element of it. It's going to throw them for a loop being in complete darkness at like 3:22 in the afternoon around here when this time of year it's what? They're more used to that like 7:22 to 7:30, give or take, right? So, yeah, I know I forget if it was him or somebody else talked about, like, right, like, if you have a dog, it's going to be really intriguing to just kind of see what they kind of do.
For those 2 minutes,
For those couple minutes, because, like, they're the perfect, really, maybe example of it outside of birds, maybe, even, or something like that, where, you know, they're so used to being on a minute-by-minute type deal in that sense that the minute they see darkness, how are they going to react, so... Yeah, I mean, it's going to be pretty cool. Let's talk about something that preps for Monday a little bit as well here. The Elite Eight, well, Sweet 16 and Elite Eight got done in March Madness. Nice little transition there. So I don't know where I fully want to get going with this because of I feel like the storylines actually at this point kind of transcend more into this weekend than this past weekend, right? Because a lot of it has to do with, obviously, NC State, right? Is it the lowest seed since, I can't remember the exact date now.
Loyola Chicago?
Was it? Yeah. Yeah, it'd have to be to make the Final Four. They're at, you know, the 11th seed, and they've just been on this run. Obviously, it's highlighted by DJ Burns for some obvious reasons, and justifiably so. But it's more than just him. This is a team that's kind of gotten hot just the right time. A team that... They weren't bad all year. I wouldn't say they were great, right? But they ended up having a pretty classic ACC-style season to get to that point. Again, go back to something we've talked about on, honestly, the past couple podcasts to certain degrees. Kind of laugh at the people who wanted Kevin Keats fired because didn't understand it. Definitely don't understand it now if you think he's if you still want him fired. But obviously for them, right, they headline this, and they get to face Purdue. And now this matchup of DJ Burns and Zach Edey really stands out because it's really tall guy against that. Not gonna say he's really fat guy because he's not really fat, but you know,
we know you like your big guys,
fellow large individual in DJ Burns. And then you know the other side of the bracket. I wouldn't say it's the afterthought side of the bracket, right? But you have UConn where it's. Very obvious, I guess, in a sense. And you'd probably have them as the heavy favorite still, as it stands right now. So, yeah. Anyway, dial it back. Go back to it. You know, it was kind of interesting this weekend, second year in a row, that I was in a hotel for the viewing of these games. Obviously, this year with it being kind of delayed-ish a week. You know, last year was Final Four weekend. This past weekend, what would have been
pushed back, yeah.
Right? And so,
it's baseball.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of. No, the baseball was on time this year.
No, I mean, everything's been pushed back, but right. The baseball.
Oh, like, I see what you're saying.
Like
gotcha.
The Super Bowl was
gotcha,
pushed back yeah. a little bit yeah. this year.
I see what you're saying, though. Gotcha. But yeah, so obviously, it's always tough-ish in those situations, but it helps that you know there's only one game out at a time at that. Point really. I mean, the only night that it wasn't was Friday, and even then, kind of staggered enough that you don't really miss any one of any particular game if you really are watching it like we are. So, can't complain too much there. But, yeah, I mean, now it just feels like it's tough because we come on Wednesdays, right, when we talk about this. So, it's hard not to have more of that focus, I'd say, on to Saturday in the Final Four at this point rather than in the rear view. But, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, obviously in the book. What was kind of your main takeaways from those games?
Well, I mean, I know we're going to talk a little bit about the women's tournament, but just the idea. I don't know if – I never did look up the stat. The idea that NC State and UConn are both in both. Final
yeah, course. I think this is the first time that two schools have had that.
Because we've had UConn girls and men's and girl and women's both make it the same year. That's happened plenty of times.
It's happened with other schools too. I know that. So.
Yeah. Syracuse did it, I think, too.
In 2016.
Yeah. But just to have two there is incredible. Yeah. And the fact that they're both not playing each other in the semifinals, that we could have an NC State UConn national championship 2 days in a row, you know how crazy that'd be?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to need some big upsets to make that happen. But the one thing I like about NC State, I think it's just the mental part of the game, the mindset. They've been playing in the NCAA tournament since they played Louisville in the ACC first round.
Yeah.
They have been playing in this NCAA tournament. They just had 11 game stretch to win the title this year. And the fact that they've won 9 in a row is incredible. I joked about on my Instagram story when Notre Dame was playing Georgia Tech in the first round. It's like, oh, we're 11 wins away from the championship. That's what NC State had, too. And they are 2 wins away from completing that ridiculous thing I said about Notre Dame. Wish it was Notre Dame, but NC State is putting the ACC on its back. And just like how Duke and Clemson have as well, along with North Carolina, proving that they were still the best conference. And obviously, a lot of people want to see it. A lot of people know what's probably going to happen. UConn-Purdue championship game would be incredible. I would love to see those two teams go at it. It's just because of the size factor. You know, DJ Burns is going to give Zach Edey some fits down low in this game.
Oh, yeah.
And NC State's that team is like, until they prove me they're going home, I'm just like, they won't go home. This team won't go home. And it's great for that area. My sister lives in Raleigh. To have the women's and the men's team in the Final Four is awesome.
Yeah.
Don't like that they were coming for Cuca College about the mascot, but, you know, that was years ago. I've gotten over it, all right?
It doesn't sound like you have.
You know that story?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm well aware of how trademark infringement works.
Yeah, coming to oh, poor Cuca College. But anyway, I've gotten over it. NC State. If this was football, I think Alabama would roll through them all. Mm-hmm. But especially, imagine a UConn-Alabama college football semifinal.
Mm-hmm.
But no, cool to see Alabama there. I mean, this is underrated good team. People look at Alabama, they don't play any defense. They don't do anything, you know.
I mean, it's
spectacular.
The thing that's interesting about the SEC as a whole, right, and this is kind of the issue I had with how to kind of grade them out, the whole bracket-wise, and obviously in the brackets we've talked about predominantly, you know, I had Illinois, and obviously they lose to UConn. But I did have Auburn winning it all in my other bracket. Auburn winning it all in my other bracket. And it's tough because the SEC just – I wouldn't say they struggled all year to be consistent like what you were talking about, but – I think it was kind of like the ACC in a sense where they all kind of cannibalized each other to a certain degree. Like, I don't think anybody had a winning streak above 5 games in the SEC this year in league play.
Yeah, probably.
And that's kind of the issue you run into with, obviously, the tournament, right? You have to win, for the most part, 5 straight games, or if you're NC State, it's 6 straight games. You know, and I can't say I'm necessarily surprised that this Alabama team got here. I think I'm surprised that it's this team that got here. Like,
yeah, they had better teams in the past.
Yeah,
especially last year.
Yeah, especially last year. And it's going to be interesting. I mean, I don't think he'll go anywhere, but there's some interesting backdrop stuff going on right now involving Nate Oates. Although I think he did sign an extension again recently, so
and
I think he's kind of there. But look, the SEC is probably – I kind of throw the number thing a little bit out the window to certain degrees. They're probably the third best basketball conference right now. I'd put behind the ACC and Big East.
Big 12, so disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, probably that third place is really a toss-up between the Big 12 and SEC, if I'm being completely honest. It's hard to really weigh anything of the Big 10 anymore. I don't mean that as a shot at Purdue, but – they've been the most consistent
like
program
you were saying,
out of
though,
conference.
You said SEC didn't have any winning streaks. That's because the leagues are a lot tougher. Purdue just beats up on the bottom teams in the Big Ten.
And that's the thing, right? Like we have an ACC school, we have an SEC school, we have a Big Ten school, we have a Big East school.
Yep.
Those are probably the 4 best conferences all year, if we're just going to call it how it is. And like I said, maybe that last spot you can intertwine out SEC with Big 12, and I'd entertain it. But, you know, I think when push came to shove this year, it happened, right? And I don't mean it's a shot, right? I mean, I know this is probably more for an overall discussion about the Elite or the Sweet 16 and into the Elite Eight, but, like, Houston didn't do a lot to convince me this year they could really make a deep, deep run. And it's not a knock on Calvin Sampson. I think he's a really good coach. Just kind of been their MO recently, the past handful of years, right? Since he's gotten that program resurrected and kind of bringing it back.
Baylor hasn't done anything since their national
title. Yeah, Baylor hasn't done anything since then, really, either.
Kansas gave up, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Kansas, I mean, you could make the case that Kansas State's had a better stretch in the past few years than Kansas has, and I would probably buy it. I mean, that's another good example. Like, Kansas State elite or Final Four last year, and
Kansas did win it 2 years ago, but.
And NIT this year, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of hope, again, about kind of funny how this always works with them, but Texas, right, in their final year in the Big 12, and they just frankly laid a brick in the tournament. It's kind of interesting. We talked a lot about how we didn't think Michigan State deserved to be in the tournament. Could probably make the same case with Texas, if not a more convincing case, like what was Texas doing in there? I think they were also 19-11 or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, even we're getting sidetracked. Anyway, let's get this back on track here. So, I forget how it's technically classified, the Final Four this year, if it's Phoenix exactly, even though it's in Glendale. I think it might be technically like Central Arizona.
I hate that. We've had Super Bowls in Glendale.
Especially, it's funny to me because we'll talk about this in a second, obviously, too, but like how like the women's Final Four is defined as Cleveland, and we know it's Cleveland. So, anyway.
Is that a Rocket Mortgage?
Yes. Yep. So, for the Final Four, I don't think it... It's tough not to see it going chalk, right, as you said, Nick, UConn and Purdue. It's just one of those things where eventually we know this to be fact over time. Like, the Cinderella run ends eventually.
It ends in this round a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think 11 seeds ever moved on.
It's really fun.
I think they've all lost in the Final Four.
Yeah, they have, yeah. It's always kind of funny to me when you have these teams come up against each other, especially in these one-game sample sizes. Like, we know exactly what to do. It's funny because I'm also going to probably bring this up a little bit when we get to the women's side of it. If you're a team, and this is why I really thought we'd see Purdue fall at some point this past weekend. Like, if you aren't out on the transition, because, like, you allow Zach Edey to get back on defense even, or playing himself on offense, it's just been game over for these teams, right? Will we see NC State try and utilize a little bit of that speed element more against them? I would imagine we kind of do. I mean, that's not to say that's been NC State's MO, because when DJ Burns been on the floor, it's been a lot of Purdue-esque ball, right, where, you know, they plant DJ Burns in the lane and let him kind of do his thing, similar to how Purdue and Zach Edey do it. I don't want to say we'll see a lot less of DJ Burns this game, because I think they're going to have him out on the floor no matter what when Zach Edey's out on the floor. Part of me wonders if they try and utilize the speed element better than other teams have against Purdue, because I think that's how you're going to have to beat Purdue. And I think the only team that we might see that happen with is if they do end up facing UConn. Now, that's a whole other case by itself. And I don't want to make it sound like it's chalk. I just have a hard time believing Alabama's going to beat UConn after what we've just kind of seen now the past, let alone 3 weeks, but really all year at this point.
You mentioned about Alabama, how this wasn't, you didn't expect this Alabama team to do the, to right. be the one. That happens a lot in that college basketball tournament.
Very true.
I mean, no one expected the Cooney, Benajay, Syracuse team was going to be the Final Four team. Well, they had plenty of great teams before that. But it's just, it's hot when you get hot at the right time. I mean, sure, you mentioned Kevin Keats, and sure, he probably never should have got fired, but did you ever see a Final Four run in this NC State team?
No,
not this year at least. And
I mean, they were 3-0 away from not even being in it.
I know.
You know?
And here they are now, beat Duke twice in the last, what's it been, 3 weeks? A lot. I mean, what do you see here, Paul? Do you see Joaquin Noah Florida teams, or do you see Virginia the rebound from losing to a 16 seed here? What do you see?
I think it's more likely we see Florida, the Florida thing with UConn repeating. It's just one of those things where, I mean, UConn's just been consistently, honestly, great all year.
UConn-Purdue would be a hell of a championship game.
And at that point, right, you get another battle of the bigs.
Yep.
You probably get a battle of the coaches, right? I mean, we always talk a lot about Hurley, but Matt Painter's a pretty good coach. I don't like how he kind of gets swept into this, honestly, the same rug Tony Bennett gets swept into. I don't think that's quite fair. I think at this point he's probably a better coach than Tony Bennett, but you had that element of it as well. So I think it's more than likely we see UConn repeat. We get that Florida repeat route. Then we do the Virginia redemption arc,
remember,
if you will.
Big Ten hasn't won a national title since 2000 Michigan State either.
Yeah.
But the Big Ten just won the football championship. So maybe the Big Ten's team coming around.
Well, yeah. I mean, who knows? But I think as it stands right now, dual prediction time. I'm going to go UConn. We're going to be sitting here next week and talk about how UConn repeated as champions.
I'm going to go. I think we're seeing Virginia again. I'm going to go Purdue is your national champion.
I do believe we see those two Monday night.
Yeah, it will be those two.
Yeah.
I the 11 seed, week to prepare for an 11 seed. Yeah. It's so hard.
Right.
So hard. Especially they always get paired up with one of the better teams and I just don't see it. Alabama's run's coming to an end.
Yeah.
Alabama to win the national title this year would be insane. Mm-hmm. Especially, I like to know this stat. How often does a team that was number one overall last year fail to make the Final Four and come back the next year and win it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, Virginia did that.
Correct.
And Purdue would be. No, Purdue wasn't number one overall, were they? Was
that
2 years ago Alabama was number one overall? Was Purdue might have been number one.
I think they might have been number one overall.
I don't know. But Alabama's run.
FDU was a play-in game last year, so I don't know.
Maybe Purdue wasn't number one overall. But Alabama's run's coming to end. UConn, Purdue, and Purdue, I think, gets it done.
Right. Yeah. Hey, speaking of Big Ten country, let's talk about the women's side of this as well at this point. LSU, Iowa, highest rating TV viewing wise of a women's college basketball game ever, 13.2 million.
Maybe
that was more than a lot. I'm not going to go through them.
They said women's basketball. Was that the highest women's event?
Yes, I believe so.
Maybe the World Cup.
World Cup. There was a whole list of events. I'm not going to go through and try and find them right now.
I would say they would have more than that.
But I think I'm in the minority on this. I'm kind of out on Iowa at this point.
Never bet against the superstar.
I think there's a lot of two Americas going on with Caitlin Clark, as we call it, but we aren't really the podcast for that platform. So, LSU, you and Iowa, as I kind of jump ahead there, and that UConn USC game afterwards was really good as well.
Just UConn back?
Kind of sucks that it gets that. It also gets the main billing, but really isn't the main event type thing, right? Yeah, UConn back. I mean, back in the Final Four, obviously. They will be taking on Iowa in the Final Four. And then the other matchup, as we talked about a little bit there, you mentioned NC State, but they got South Carolina on the other side, which is kind of all of a sudden, I wouldn't say they've become an afterthought because it's not really fair to that crew, but it's just, I think a lot of the hype, again, is going to be surrounding the other game because of Iowa and UConn.
I haven't checked the times. I assume the Iowa-UConn game's the second game.
You know, that's the interesting part in this. I don't know. I forgot to look going into this. I think Purdue and North Carolina State are the first game on the men's side anyway.
And I loved it when they moved. Yeah. They moved. It was a great move when they moved the women's Final Four and championship to Friday, Sunday instead of Sunday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
I just like it's a whole weekend now. Instead, it doesn't run until Tuesday. Yeah. I thought that was a great move. They did that a while ago, but I just like it.
Yeah. But, it's weird that the South Carolina team, who's on the verge of some history themselves here, is becoming a bit of an afterthought because Iowa-UConn is going to be this one Final Four matchup and a battle of Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers.
Paige Beckers is very good, too.
Yeah, it's weird because I'm very much still in the minority on kind of both those teams where I'm kind of all in on South Carolina at this point. I just think, again, they've been kind of become this weird afterthought in this tournament.
Is that the same four conferences?
SEC, Big Ten, Big East, ACC. Yeah, yeah.
It's the same four.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy. Crazy.
Oh, isn't it? Yeah, get out of your Big 12. You ain't with us. Don't put them tied for fourth. Get out of here. I didn't even realize that.
I said, well.
Well, you got two of the same team, so, I mean, there's a good chance. But
On the men's side, I said there was the argument that you could make the case. I don't think there is on the women's side. I think the SEC is firmly.
Even though the Pac-12.
Pac-12
had a lot of love in the women's this year.
Yeah, well, and justifiably so. Yeah, I mean, I think on the women's side, if you were to do this, I would say probably SEC 1.
Yeah, without a doubt. Just deep.
And then.
Top heavy.
I'd probably honestly go Pac-12 2 this year.
Could have been. They just didn't get a team in.
Yeah, I go Pac-12 2. ACC, I think I'd go 3. Big East, 4.
I mean, no one thought an ACC team was going to get
it. It's very funny because the Big Ten also had a decent year on the women's side of things, but it's just like, Jesus Christ. Like,
again,
like the men's, it just like fell apart.
Yeah, Purdue and Iowa just dominating through the conference.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
You know, Ohio State was decent.
Yeah, and they choked, so. As usual. But yeah, I mean, it feels weird, but like South Carolina just feels like the afterthought, even though they're the number one overall seed on the women's side too and everything. And now they kind of become a little bit of this afterthought because of the UConn-Iowa matchup. Kind of crazy.
I mean, not to disrespect NC State at all. I mean, they've deserved to get here. But South Carolina, almost kind of like a bye in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, it feels that way.
Yeah, it does. The odds of a UConn-NC State championship in both has to be extremely high.
That would be the first time ever. I know that.
I can't even imagine the odds. The fact of how NC State women's would get there and the men's,
right,
along with UConn. Obviously, UConn men's, good odds. And UConn women, probably decent odds. But the NC State, to get them there, ooh. What is NC State ranked? What is their seed in women's?
I think they're 3 or 4.
Just the odds.
I'm trying to remember.
Getting all four of those winners right is the biggest ones, NC State women over South Carolina. Because I just said it was a bye. So that's going to be tough to do, but I mean, you can be in the minority, like you said, you could be on the opposite, but there's a lot of people like Lionel Messi. It kind of reminds me of Lionel Messi. Great career. Everyone was rooting for him to get that World Cup championship final, and he did. Kind of like what Caitlin Clark's going with here in Iowa. Everyone's trying to root for her to get that championship, and she's two wins away from doing it. Obviously, a lot of people are going to be pulling for Iowa. I will be pulling for Iowa because I grew up in the era where UConn won every year, so I don't want UConn to win ever again.
Yeah, I mean, so I got...
You know, Breanna Stewart, great player.
I got put on, not blast, but like, I've never liked UConn. I've never, I don't say it jokingly, like, I'm dead serious. There's only two Italians I don't like, and that's Tommy Lasorda and Gino Auriemma. And
you like the Jersey Shore guys?
Well, okay, I guess there's what?
Like the situation?
I guess there, well, no, I'm lumping the girls in there too. So there's,
yeah.
I guess what, 11 people I don't like then? 11 Italians?
The whole cast.
But no, I mean, I just hate his shtick. I've always hated it. I've jokingly said I've always been a more pro-Pat Summit individual than Gino Auriemma. If you know, you know.
Muffet McGraw.
Something about Muffet being a first
name. It's the name Muffet.
It's something off about it. But no, I mean, I'd love nothing more in all honesty if Dawn Staley just went in there and stomped out Gino Auriemma in the title game. I would absolutely love it. It'd be a chef's kiss moment for me. But
they don't like each other, do they?
Gino doesn't like himself, I don't think. Yeah. If I'm being completely honest, Gino's one of the old school coaches, I call it, where it's got to be about him, as I've classified it as. You know, in the same vein that Boeheim and Krzyzewski kind of lived, and Calhoun and those guys, right? You know, they got to be the ones who are bigger than life, and I forgot who exactly said. I know it was on Lebatard show, I think it was. Somebody brought up, like, it's got to be eating Gino alive that he's not the storyline going into this, and it's Caitlin Clark,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, or especially in his case too, it's got, now it's Caitlin Clark versus Paige Beckers, right? Like, you know, he's got to be eating him absolutely alive that it's not him being the storyline. So, then, you know, a lot of people all of a sudden during this whole deal, you see a lot of people now hopping on the Caitlin Clark and Iowa bandwagon, but all of a sudden there's a lot of people just showing like, oh, I'm pro UConn again here. I'm like, why do people want to root for UConn? Like, I don't want to be that guy. It's tough for me. It's a bit, you know, say hypocritical because I'm a Yankee fan, right? But it's like, why do you want to root for the team that just gets everything anyway? I guess it'd be more like with being like a Duke fan on the men's side. You know what I mean?
I didn't mention it earlier. Not a big Dan Hurley fan.
Yeah, I mean, he's
a little much.
He's a tough one to swallow. tough pill to swallow there, I think, but.
He's crazy.
But he's not like in your face the way Gino is. You know what I mean? Like, you can tell Dan's very, what I would call, he would prefer his players to be the headlines and not him. Whereas I've never gotten that from Gino. I still don't get that from Gino.
Yeah.
I'd love him more again, like I said, if Gino were to lose to Dawn Staley.
I'm going Iowa over South Carolina in the championship.
Oh, God, you are gross. Can't do it.
South Carolina over UConn?
Yeah.
You're going Iowa losing?
Yeah.
To Gino, who you just said.
I mean, I've had a hot take about this for a while. I'll say it on here. I don't think I'm going to get blasted. Caitlin Clark's going to get, God. She is just the stop sign's coming for Caitlin Clark.
Where?
If it's not against.
She is unbelievable. Have you not seen her shoot the ball? She's cool. Unbelievable.
Cool. I can't believe she's the number one overall prospect for the WNBA draft. I got to be honest with you. I don't think it's going to go well. I don't think it's going to end well for her in the WNBA, if I'm being honest. So.
She is really, really good.
Yeah.
And I'm pulling for her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm pulling for the Gamecocks. So, here's that. Anyway, we had a little bit of NFL breaking news this morning. Stephon Diggs traded from Buffalo to the Texans. There was a pick swap in there, more or less, that facilitated this. I think Buffalo's sending like a fifth and a sixth with him, and the Bills get a second round next year from Houston via Minnesota.
Not surprised.
Yeah, there's a lot to kind of dissect here, even though I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, because there's always like a really weird dialogue involving both Diggs and the Bills. Obviously, the Bills one's just because it's local, but the Diggs one, I don't want to spend a ton of time on, only because we know what he is at this point, kind of, and stuff like that. The fascinating part to me is, I think, just kind of like, the Bills are taking on $31 million in dead cap to do this. Houston, obviously, it's very apparent they're going all in. I'm intrigued to see the dynamic, though, because they are a predominantly young team that I don't necessarily think they needed to upgrade the wideout room, and I don't know if they necessarily really upgrade it here either, necessarily. It's going to be interesting watching Diggs think he's the wideout one still when he's not. And I'll say it here, a bit of a hot take. Again, guess I'm having back-to-back of them. I view Diggs as the wide receiver three in Houston. Like, and that's wild, but like, look, he's not getting any younger. Again, don't want to spend a ton of time on this element of it. We know what he is. The minute something doesn't go right, he complains. And we saw how, I wouldn't say quick, but, you know, he had that reply tweet yesterday in regards to, again, you know, we talked about how good was Josh Allen before versus after Diggs and stuff like that. And he was like more or less saying, you know, you sure he's going to be all that good without me if that happens? And less than 24 hours later, right, he's out the door heading for Houston. I've always been the mindset, you know, I don't have a problem with, you know, you don't have that diva element, but, you know, don't make it a headache for me. It's been a headache for a while, I'd say, in Buffalo.
And your boy Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. And, you know, look, I've always viewed Diggs as a guy who kind of teeters. It's very interesting because we had this discussion on here, not recently, but a bunch before, right? I view him in that Davante Adams tier where it's like, I've never really been fully convinced that they're a wideout one for whatever reason, never been able to kind of put them in that true wideout one territory. And he's, it's good to have an ego and everything. I get it. You know, more power to you. But it's going to be interesting, like I said, to see how this dynamic works in Houston now, because you ain't number one down there. That's Nico Collins. And like I said, I have him at three. That means I have him behind Tank Dell. So
it's good for Buffalo. Move on. Start fresh. Yeah. Draft a receiver.
Well, that's the interesting part in that.
Josh Allen's good enough. He does need a receiver, but he'll make people better what they are. Diggs in Houston. Now I'm just thinking about it, hearing about that trade, just like, and what you said, it's not going to work out there. It's not that, it doesn't matter if he's the number one, number two, number three.
Right.
He's going to get mad that he's not the number one. It doesn't matter where you put him. Mm-hmm. He's going to be mad that, even if he's number one, he's going to get, here's what I'm trying to say. He's going to get mad that he's not getting the balls all the time. He expects to be throwing the ball every single play. Mm-hmm. And Tank Dell, Nico Collins, they're going to get their throws, and he's going to be pissed that he's not getting his throws, and it's just going to be a head case. And honestly, this kind of hurts Houston a little bit. I think they would have been better off with the team they had.
Yeah, I mean, I
don't know if it helps them.
I didn't think they needed to do much improvement. I mean, I thought you go and get Joe Mixon. Not knock on Singletary, right? Who walked in free agency anyway? But look, that's a
Singletary.
It's an instant improvement in the running back room for them, for what they need, for what they're going for. I just don't see what this does for them. Diggs is better than Robert Woods. Okay, I'm not gonna sit here and deny that. But, like, you had a good thing going with the young guys, with Robert Woods being the veteran guy. Dalton Schultz is your tight end, and now with Mixon at running back, it's one of the better skill combos in the NFL right there. It really is. I don't know what – and look, we might be sitting here and being wrong because, like, look, those first couple of years in Buffalo for Diggs were harmonious. It was like a complete 180 from what we saw towards the tail end of his career with the Vikings, right? I just don't know at his age and what he expects to get done now. I'm not convinced we see it be a quiet year for that team.
One thing it does help for us, though, as fantasy owners.
Yeah.
Tank Dell and Nico Collins are going to get a lot of better looks now with double teams going.
Well, right. I mean, this also helps, you know, in the quarterback side of it, too, with CJ Stroud's fantasy value. I mean, he was probably already trending to being probably what I would call probably a worse QB5. For fantasy stuff, I mean, it's probably pushed them. It probably pushed them towards the QB3 territory.
Diggs will help Stroud out tremendously. Yeah. It's just Diggs is going to get mad that he's not getting all the production.
Yeah,
and that's just that's how he's gone. Everywhere he's gone.
I want to kind of end this portion of it on this too, for the topic. And I don't know if you'll necessarily feel the same way exactly I do, but you know, we aren't Bills fans. You know, we. We live in the same ecosystem.
How are they taking it? How's it feeling?
It's really weird, man. I don't disagree in the fact that they feel as though they got fleeced in this deal. Where I do disagree with them, though, is like, and this is something I've had this conversation about with, oddly enough, Syracuse basketball going on right now with some of the transfer stuff in the portal. Let the headaches go. Like, sure, you'll be left to probably scramble a little bit, but you'll be better off in the long. And it's different a little bit, obviously, with pro to college. So, like, I'm well aware. But if you're the Bills, you'll be better off in the long run without this. Believe me when I say that. Like, the beginning part of the Bills season last year on offense, and this is where I will kind of leave it on this, awful lot of funneling it to Stephon Diggs for no reason other than the fact that it was probably him being Stephon Diggs in the locker room, right? We'll see. Did Josh Allen improve immediately when Diggs got there? Yeah, absolutely. He's also 4 years older now and 4 years deeper into his NFL career than when Diggs got there. So I think what I'm kind of getting at here is, like, I'm willing to bet they trade up in the draft, go and get, my guess, probably like Roma Duzier.
and then they'll be tough.
And it will just, you'll be better off without. You'll be better off for it.
If they can if that actually happens, this is a tremendous day for the Bills fans.
Yeah. I think my message for Bills fans, like I'm saying here, is like, let it go.
You know what my message is?
Let it go. He wasn't getting younger either in this deal, right? Like I don't mean to cut you off there, but like, he's entering that stage of wideouts where like they start losing a step. Like, it's okay. Let it go. You will be fine.
What's your message? Let it go.
Exactly.
My message is build a dome.
Well, beside the point. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that's my message.
Me and you have been banging that drum now since who knows how long.
I like the snow games. I get it.
Oh, God, snow games are miserable. I play. I practiced in one time when we were playing back in the day. It's just the worst. I mean, it's great in the moment, but it's just the worst. Like,
yeah. Feet are wet.
Yeah. All right, a couple other things to get to here before we jump out. Baseball opening weekend. Nick, we sat here last week, and you joked about how the Pirates will be 5-0. Well, it's not a joke. It's reality.
Yeah.
Or it was reality. Now we're on the doorstep of potentially being, what, 6-0 at the end of the – well, are they going to get the game in today?
Yeah, I checked the weather. It rained in D.C. all this afternoon, but it's supposed to clear up tonight. Okay, so
I just know that because Baltimore's in the delay themselves right now. So
yeah, I'm hopeful that they gets in today. But, you know, I know it's only five games in of a 162-game regular season, but – the offense is looking how I thought it would look.
Yeah.
It's not even the power. They've only had four home runs, I think, start, but it's just consistent hitting. And sure, yeah, the Marlins, half of the Marlins rotation is out with injury right now. And the Nationals are the Nationals. But five wins,
when
though.
You put it like that.
Two extra inning wins. Bullpen's been looking good. We've only given up 21 runs, and six of those came from Bailey Falter, who should be dumped from the team.
He's young.
No, we don't want him. He's just there till our boy Skeens gets here, you know. Your boy Skeens.
You mean the JT Brubaker replacement.
But here's the name I'll give you, man. Jared Jones had his first career start the other night. And
really good.
Looked really good. He had 21 swings and misses, 10 strikeouts, which was the most strikeouts, I think, for a rookie Pirates debut, MLB debut since 1992. Tim Wakefield, I think was the stat. They are RIP legend, knuckleball legend. But they're 5-0 for the first time since 1983. And if they win tonight, they will be 6-0 for the first time since they were 10-0 in 1962. Something the 71 and 79 championship teams did not do.
Well, those teams, historically, the 71 and 9 in that era, they were slow to get out the gate, notoriously. Dave Parker will tell you.
Yes.
So
and so is McCutcheon. Yes. McCutcheon finally got his first couple of hits. I'm not nervous about him. He's always been a slow
starter. Still on the doorstep of 300, right?
Yep. He's waiting until we get home. this
I
weekend.
I don't mean to laugh. It's the way you said it.
This weekend's going to be intense. I hope they can win the series tonight against the Nationals. Mm-hmm. It's all about taking series, not undefeated records or anything like that. Just take the series. That's the goal. But the Orioles this weekend will be a nice test, see where we really stand. I remember last year we started 28. We go into Tampa Bay, big game, top two teams at MLB at the time, and the Rays murdered us, and season fell off.
The same.
Yeah. But a lot of young players, a lot of guys still not there yet. Future's looking bright. We got people who actually signed for years. Sure, they take cheaper deals with Pittsburgh, but they're loyal, and you got to love that. So there's people that want to play here. Fans are excited. 5-0. It's just fun to look at the standings right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a really good overall weekend, I think, for baseball, and obviously now the couple days after it. This is going to sound homer in nature, but I think a lot of people were probably thrilled just kind of seeing Houston start 0-4, and probably equally as less than thrilled seeing the Yankees start 4-0, obviously because they played each other, but I think, obviously the stuff from 2017 still, no pun intended, rings pretty deep with a lot of people. I know I even got a couple texts from friends who are fans of other teams who were just like, you know, it's kind of hard seeing the Yankees be the ones who do it. But, you know, the fact that Houston was 0-4 to start was like, oh, damn, like, it's nice.
1-5 now. Yeah. And then one win's a no-hitter.
Right, yeah, and that's the thing, right? But you come off the gate and you get a no-hitter on Monday. Yeah, Monday. This is the tough part of coming back from being out of town for a few days. You always kind of lose track of time to a certain degree. But, yeah, Monday with a guy who may not even be on the Major League roster come June because of Verlander or whenever Verlander comes back. So
how about that?
Yeah.
First time since 1900, I think. Something like that. Bryce Harper, first three hits of the season, they're all home runs.
Yeah, he started, what was it, like 0-11 or something like that?
Like 12 or something.
Yeah. And what was he, 3-for-4 yesterday with
three bomb
homers, like just crazy stuff. And
he gets when he gets.
It's kind of weird looking around the league right now too. I mean, not that it's not surprising seeing the Angels just be horrendous, but like Rendon's 0-19 or something to start the year, something like that. Like
Trout's, you know, healthy. When he's healthy, he's good.
But I mean, it's pretty interesting. I don't think there was a ton of like big surprises. Like there was a lot of fun, and there was already. He already had a couple bench-clearing incidents, both pretty much involving the Brewers and the Mets and stuff like that. But for going against the Final Four or the Elite Eight in Sweet 16s this weekend and Easter, it was a pretty good opening weekend for baseball, I thought, all things considered. It'll be interesting to see how this week kind of plays out. Obviously, there's Tigers and Mets got postponed again today, so be some interesting stuff scheduling there to get gone. But, like, yeah. We're going to be coming into this weekend riding some pretty good momentum going against, I know I'm doing the numerical thing, but you're going against the Final Four this weekend and stuff like that. But I think
Masters the next weekend.
Baseball's in a pretty good spot to open up the year already, I'd say.
Yeah.
At least in my opinion. Outside of, there's some stuff in Oakland that we aren't going to really dive into just yet because a lot of it's more just theory at this point. But if it
you believe in the whole Ruiz skin option thing?
I wouldn't put it past
that. I believe in it.
I wouldn't. That's why I want to wait until we actually get more base on it besides just being a theory, but hard not to believe it, especially since Brent Rooker's pretty much been benched all year and he has a similar bracelet that he wears. So, yeah, that's all I'll say about it for now. But there's a couple other things, too, involving that organization that unfortunately, because we talk here on Wednesdays like we do, we won't know about some certain things until tomorrow and Friday about their future for the next couple of years that I want to wait before I get deep into the weeds. So, but yeah, and then yeah, Richmond was pretty good. I didn't want to talk about this for a second, and I know Easter's tough in terms of events, but I'm going to end up ranting here for a second, so I apologize in advance. But it was a good weekend. I know you asked about the weather, Nick. It was great for the most part. You know, Sunday was a little bit tricky because of the rain, but we had our first Cup Series points-paying race start in the damp on an oval. And that was pretty cool to be a witness of. I've been to now the first road course race in Cup Series for the rain at Watkins Glen a few years ago, and now the oval one as well, even though the All-Star race was started in the damp last year. It's just a little bit, you know, kind of different, I suppose, being an actual points-paying race. Richmond is in some pretty big jeopardy of losing one of their two races. Really? Now. I get it to a degree. I'm not going to sit here and deny that maybe the track is at fault for a little bit of it. It's a track that, you know, like the driveway sealing, the seal, like when you have like an asphalt driveway, when people seal it, that, so Richmond as a track used to do that for the whole track, year in and year out. And when me and you were kids, Nick, that was when Richmond was kind of at its peak in terms of the current configuration. You probably don't know this, when Richmond was originally built, it was a half mile track. Now it's 3/4 mile. But it used to be a half-mile oval, and then right about 89, 90, they made it to the current configuration that it is. All in the same property, like, don't get me wrong, but that's kind of the little history of Richmond. Now, they don't seal it anymore, and I think that takes away a little bit of it because, you know, now there's just not as much slipping and sliding for the guys, stuff like that. But it's, to me, it it's kind of funny hearing fans and people even in the industry talk about how like Richmond hasn't been a good track in a while. Track can't control decisions that other people make. I don't like, again, this next gen car, for as good as it is on certain tracks, it's been all, and this car was designed specifically for more or less the short track and road courses, and it's been, that's where this car has been the worst, you know, because these guys, there's just, it used to be when we were in the old generation of cars, not the current gen, four gears, you know, H pattern shifting, you weren't shifting at Richmond. The only track, oval track wise, you were shifting really at all would be Pocono. And now, you know, these guys at short tracks, they can downshift and upshift. You know, the minute they get into a mistake that they've caused, you know, they can downshift and then upshift out of it. And, you know, it's just, that's part of it. I, you know, there's not enough horsepower for these short tracks. I think a lot of it comes down to the tire, though, too. I mean, Goodyear just, and a perfect example of it was Bristol a few weeks ago. I mean, the tire was just, Jesus, what is going on outside all of a sudden?
That's not the air?
That's not the air. The air is off. That is outside. So anyway, it's destroyed my rant a little bit, but it's too good of a tire. And I get why Goodyear would want to make too good of a tire, but like, there's just no tire fall off. The track is not taking the rubber. You know, you have guys who have gone on the record and said that this tire that Goodyear brings for most of these tracks, now you can go out there and just run it, not change it.
Not once?
Not once. So this is where I've kind of fallen on this. If you want to take a race away from Richmond, I'm fine with that. I really am. Because my viewpoint then at this point shifts where – either all tracks you go to have two events, which is just not possible, or you only go to each track once. And that's kind of where I fall on this. Would it suck only going to Daytona once? Hell yeah, it would. I'm not going to sit here and deny that. But if it's the only time you go to Daytona for the 500 now, fine with it.
Do you think they'll get rid of your April Richmond race?
It's going to be interesting which one they get rid of. Do they get rid of the summer or the spring race? I don't know which one's going to get the axe necessarily. Don't know that yet. Probably won't know. I'm going to sooner lock in this year to renew, though, in case. So I'm going to go to Richmond tomorrow. I love going to Richmond. It's by far. And the part that sucks, NASCAR will never get back to what it was in like 2004, where every driver has their own souvenir trailer and everything's packed in the what's it called? You know, in the midway and stuff like that. Like, it's just not the way the world operates anymore. It's just not. And certain fans and certain people in the industry just need to get over that. It is what it is. I certain tracks, I agree with it. There are certain tracks where you need more than just the on-race product or stuff like that. And I get that. I get it to a degree, even at Richmond, even at Watkins Glen where I've been, even at Daytona where I've been, Dover where I've been. I get it. But, like, for 75% of your fan base there is there for weekend or, you know, race in, race out at certain tracks, we could kind of care less about that. We would rather you improve the on-track product than the off-track product. And what I mean by that is get the tires figured out. Get your car figured out at this point, because it ain't the tracks for the most part. Like I said, each track probably contributes it its own a little bit. I'm not going to sit here and deny that. But it's the tire, it's the car, and I don't want to be that guy. Do I think each series needs a freaking 3 hours of practice like we used to? No, not going to sit here and deny that. But the fact that there's only now, like, for each series, a guaranteed like 40 minutes of on-track time each weekend. What I mean by that is just practice and qualifying and then the race. I love going and watching practice and qualifying because it puts the focus on each driver and each car and each team. Like, this will sound dumb, but I know I hate when I do this when we discuss stuff like this within NASCAR because it's not really fair to you, Nick. Because, like, now you've been to a couple races working it, so, like, you're more – I wouldn't say you're more entrenched, right? But, like, odds are you know who Harrison Burton is compared to, like, what the equivalent of Harrison Burton be 15 years ago, which would have been, like, John Wood. Right. You know what I mean? But, like, you could go and you could see teams in each series. Like, there's nothing I love more back, even pre-pandemic when they were able to, when they actually had practices and stuff like this, than watching the smaller teams go out there and run and stuff like that, where you just kind of see how they kind of operate. Now you really can't. Like, it's just, now the only time the smaller teams that I call get screen time is when an incident like Saturday occurs, you know, which I know you saw. It ended up, Bleacher Report ran with it. I mean, I got push notification you about from Bleacher Report, which I never get for the Xfinity series. You know, the second tier series about Joey Gase throwing his bumper at Dawson Cram, who wrecked him.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only time these small teams get screen time now. And for those of you who don't know, Joey Gase runs that 35 car on his own. He runs his own operation. It's not going to be cheap to repair that car, right? But people don't care about that. People don't care that Dawson Cram runs for JD Motorsports, who's been a longtime staple in the series as a, frankly, and I don't mean this as a knock on them, a backmarker field filler team who gives opportunities to guys like Dawson Cram. And, oh, by the way, Ross Chastain got his start in the Xfinity series there. That's where Ross Chastain got his start. Look where Ross Chastain is now. He's one of the main names in NASCAR. He's one of two drivers who have their own souvenir trailers now, and that's it. One of two. That's
where did
it.
You start again?
JD Motorsports.
Oh.
That four car, that's where the four car that spun and wrecked Joey Gase, that's the car Ross Chastain got to start in the Xfinity series. So, like, I know I went on a full-fledged rant there, and it's just whatever. But that's just kind of the way I feel about it. And again, I'm one of the few I feel like that's just knows that, like, we aren't getting back to what we were. Now we can kind of get back to a little bit to what it was, and I think that'll just make everything better. But, like, it's tough because, like, I remember pre-pandemic, sounds bad saying this, but I would rather them, and it was a bit of a shell shock for me because, like, I was used to having each driver have their own trailer, souvenir trailer. And when I went to Watkins Glen for the first time, when I went to Watkins Glen in 2014 for the first time, was also the first race I'd been in person in 6 years at that point. And, you know, they still had trailers at that point, but, you know, the next year in 15, seeing them have the tents that they had for a while, for only a couple of years. But every driver had their own thing. I'd rather go back to that tent than just having, like, a few trailers the way it is. Kind of depressing. I'd rather have the tent. Tent was kind of cool in retrospect. At least every driver had their own space and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I'm just really done.
Here's what I'll say.
Full-fledged thing there about
Jackson Chicharro for his career home run. How about that?
Oh, congratulations.
I'm not a diehard NASCAR fan like you, but I am a fan of individual sports like golf and tennis. Mm-hmm. And their schedule is just one place each season. I always thought it was kind of weird that they did go back to Daytona twice a year and other tracks twice a year. It should be just once, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean,
because you look forward to that time of year every year.
And look, I am well aware that you simply can't – that it can't be the case of that way, even though it's what I would rather see. There aren't enough tracks that can – safely and viably handle what NASCAR is it and the national level.
When's the last time they made a track? I'm not counting the Chicago Street Race.
Like built it?
Built an actual racetrack. Like,
well, I guess it probably would have to be 2000. Well, they were obviously building and built quasi before, but that would be Chicagoland in Kansas in 2001.
Jeez. Why don't they build another one?
Land. I mean, it costs. I mean, they sold off most of the property that it was Auto Club Speedway because the land's just way too valuable. And it's tough because, like, look, I know we're running a bit long on this one that I didn't anticipate, but a lot of nibbies involved that, you know, they're trying to take away a lot of different historic tracks in America, like Laguna Seca out in Monterey in California. NASCAR doesn't go there. The track couldn't handle NASCAR. It's not – they have the facilities to. It's the track configuration. They have their most famous part in you can Google if you want, or everybody can. The corkscrew can't. Stock cars won't be able to handle the corkscrew. Just physically won't. The drivers would break their back. The cars would literally break trying to go through it. But IndyCar goes there. Sports cars, IMSA goes there. And that track's been there for years, like literal years. Like we're talking going back to like the 50s and 60s years. And when it was built, not a ton of houses around it. Now there's a ton of houses around it, and people are upset that there are loud race cars going. It's the same people that get mad when, like, well, this airport that's been here for years that we just built our house by is causing us a disruption. Like, you know what you're signing yourself up for going there. Mm-hmm. Same thing at the Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway, where people are upset that there are loud noises. Like, you move next to a racetrack. You should know what's happening. You know, it's tough to handle portions of that, and that's why I just don't think you see new tracks being built in that sense. It's possible. I'm not going to say or deny. I mean,
I think it's time.
NASCAR goes to Circuit of the Americas, right? And I guess if you want to go by that sense, they weren't the ones who built it by any means. It was designed and built for F4, Formula One, and that was in 2012. But, you know, so it's possible. I'm not going to sit here and say it's not possible for somebody to go out and build a track, or NASCAR to build a track and have the series and sanctioning body go there, right? But I just don't see, at least in this current state of affairs, that happening.
I think it's time. But did you get that hat at Richmond?
I did. Yeah, I had to upgrade my 2311 wardrobe, and nice. The hat was part of it. You know, some of the new logo and everything, and stuff like that. So.
Oh, 11, okay.
Yeah, XI.
Reading the Roman numerals there.
Yeah, well, there you go. Now.
Yeah, do the shout-out here. Let's
go ahead. So appreciate everybody for tuning in. Nick, who are you shouting out?
Double shout-out today.
Oh.
Shout-out my cousin Jack DeRue. Mm. Congrats on winning his first ever fantasy championship, fantasy basketball champion this year.
Fantasy basketball, nice.
Yeah. I beat my cousin Kyle, still looking for his first title, but we'll see. But so shout-out Kyle as well. But my other shout-out is my cousin Karen, her birthday, Karen Crisani. It's her birthday on Monday.
Happy birthday.
And she's a big fan of my social media March Madness bracket. So
I got some hot takes going on with that, by the way, that we need to
shout out there. Karen, thanks for voting. Thanks for following along. Go Patrick Starr, but I think Michael Scott's going to win. Shout out Karen, Kyle, and Jack. Cousins, shout out today.
The people who voted for Michael Scott over Walter White, I need to fight you. There's a lot of people I need to fight throughout this bracket, but I cannot believe some of the voting in this year's.
It's crazy.
Absolutely asinine. Absolutely asinine.
I've got a lot of complaints. I'm just the one that does it, man. I'm not the one that votes.
I know. I'm aware, but it's not at you. It's the people who do the voting.
It's my followers. That is partially my fault.
How dare you? And on that note, we'll sign off and talk again next Wednesday. Enjoy the weekend.
And the Pirates will be... And the Pirates will be 3. Then they got 2 with the Tigers. So 3 plus 2 more with the Nationals. 5, 7, 12-0 the next time we see you.
Okay, you heard it from Nick. Pirates are 12-0. We'll see you on Wednesday if that is the case.